The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay. Thanks for showing up on time. I really appreciate it. It's kind of weird that this, and I've never seen this front row completely empty, but since we began class, but well, thank you. That really makes me feel better. So today's structure of class is going very similar to what we did last time, which was we're going to talk a little bit about the reading, play a bunch of games around the reading, and then we'll end of class probably with more time for you to work through your prototype. Just as a reminder, Rick and I are here to do any playtesting that you might want. We'll give you feedback. Along the lines of feedback, we've also put all the grades up. Thanks to Rick for getting all the for assignment 2. And all the if you look at the comments that we've sent, there are 2 sections. One is a section that's just about your individual write-up, which only you see. And then there is a chunk that is all the comments that we gave to every single one of your team members, which was basically based on your project itself. Do take those in mind. Do keep those in mind, because there's a lot of stuff there that, a lot of the feedback that we're giving you, that in the hopes that you will be able to put that feedback to good use for assignment 3. Did you have a general comment?
Yeah, in particular, rules. Proofread your rules, test your rules. The presentation and expression of your rules is just as important, if not more important, than the design of your game. That's why we have you play games you haven't played before and read the rules you haven't seen before, just to see how bad the professionals get it done. To try to be better than that. The main things we're looking for, coherence, clarity, organization, figures, and illustrations. So for assignments 3, please try to put in illustrate, at least bare minimum. Illustrate what it looks like when your game is set up. Illustrate what it looks like when a major state change happens in the game. Give us a basic section that just says, here's the kind of goal, how you play the game. Here's how you actually play the game. Here's some examples for how various things within the game happen. There is some rules guidelines on the in the Stellar part of the materials, is one of the supplementary readings we've given you. Really pay attention to that for assignment 3. Mm-hmm. Basically, with each assignment, we get a little bit more tougher when we're grading the rules section.
Right, because you've had 2 rounds of feedback already on rules, and hopefully, by the third time around, you know what you get a good idea of what we're looking for. Also, use illustrations in your rules to get your points across. That's something that we frequently find underused, where you spend a lot of words trying to explain something which could have been far easier to understand with a simple line-art drawing. Even just like a cell phone camera or like a sketch would probably have been more informative than certain paragraphs.
I have a Europe working for me, working with me on a board game. And she did something amazing that I'd actually never thought about doing for rules. She made it basically in PowerPoint. It's really, really long. It's a lot of pages. So I'm really not sure how well it's going to work that way when we're doing testing with it. But it's very illustrative, very diagrammy. Lots of big words, very little like written out. Very little written out, like long paragraphs of language. I'm going to get the latest version of that and share it with the class so you can kind of see what that looks like, if that's useful for your game or not.
I personally have had a lot of luck with Google Docs built-in drawing tools. For their word processing, documents, you can bring up the drawing in there. And just like drawing things like cards that overlap each other with text in them, like Google Docs has all the tools you need for that. Drawing arrows that arc in curves with one arrowhead or 2 arrowheads and everything that you need there is already Google Docs. So if you don't have a drawing program, there's a lot built into Microsoft Word and in Google Docs that you can take advantage of. They don't have to look great, but they could often get across the point a lot easier than text. So do try to use those.
Yeah. the next playtest is March 7th, is that right?
I believe that's right. I don't have to...
May 7th, thank you.
May.
Time flows forward. So I highly, highly recommend bringing a draft of your rules in and having that as part of the playtest.
Right.
You'll get feedback from Philip and myself. You'll also get feedback from our guest lecturer, too.
Every time somebody asks you for rule clarification in class or when you're playtesting up with your dorm mates or whatever, that's a good opportunity for you to think of how you can reword your rules or reformat your rules. That's clearly a situation where this could be a question that's going to come up again when we play the game, or it could be a situation like they just didn't understand the rules as written right now, so you've got to rephrase it somehow. Maybe use things like bullet points, examples, and make sure they're visually distinct when someone's visually scanning your rules.
Yeah, game designer I follow on Twitter, very very well spoken. There's a lot of blogging. Daniel Salas just posted. There's a difference between a broken rule and broken rules presentation. Like the problem could be in either of those places, it could be both those places. But without testing, you're just not going to find it.
If the only way that people are playing your game is with you explaining it to them, then you're not getting the feedback that you need on your rules. So make sure that for assignment 3, your rules have been tested too. Your rule sheet have been tested as well. Also, one tip for people who are doing personal write-ups. People are getting better at sort of identifying what, you know, things that went well, things that didn't quite go so well in the projects. And that's good. In general, if you did a decent write-up, you probably got a extra half grade on top of your grade. So if you got like a B minus, if you got a B plus, that your write-up alone could push you to an A minus, for instance. What some people don't consistently do is just say next time I'm going to do this, or next time I'm going to make sure not to do this. Just like simple things of like, what are you going to take out of this for future projects? So right now, we're seeing good analysis of your previous project, but use the write-ups to also concretize what your takeaway is, right? You know, this is what I'm going to make sure that I'm going to try to do, or maybe you're not sure, but this is something that you're going to try to do the next time you make a game. This is what you're going to try to do. That can help a lot.
Yeah, for assignment 3, if that's the last game you ever make, then what are you going to do in another software project? What are you going to do on another team project, another design project? Think about the future.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a design thing. It could be next time, if I work in a team on a creative project, I'm going to make sure that I communicate with them this way, or make sure that they understand, blah. You know, just something like that will be some sort of lesson that you're taking out from the previous assignment would be great. Any questions about the assignment 2? Great. By the way, do you get an email or something from Stellar that tells you grades have been posted?
No. Because like, I think with other classes, they typically post a lot more grades, like PSETs and other stuff, so it'd get kind of annoying. With like 4 classes posting a PSET every week, right?
That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. Well, okay, that's a good thing that we're telling you in class then. Today's reading is mostly about Cosmic Encounter. It's actually a bit of a postmortem. It's written in the sort of same style as the flavor text of that you find inside Cosmic Encounter. And I thought it might help to actually just open up the box, give you an idea of what it looks like inside. You might have gotten an idea from the writer, or actually, who's played this? Okay, all right. Pretty popular in MIT, actually. You've got a bunch of planets.
Oh, I've seen this. I've watched people play this.
Yeah.
This is the latest edition. You might have seen the old West End edition.
And Eon Games even before that.
Yeah.
I forget why there's one planet that's bigger than all the other planets.
I think there's a special power that you can get.
Jupiter.
No, it means that this is bigger. It's not even the solar system. So you got a bunch of planets in different colors, and I believe the colors correspond to the different players, by the flight sources. A bunch of tokens.
some of which are used, some of which are not used, depending on the assortment of characters that you got in your game. It's a flagship of some sort. I think there's one particular race that gets a flagship. So you may not need that either. This is a counter. You can see you can put, I think these are race. These are little discs with notches cut in out of them. But then there's also there's a notch that sticks out and a notch that sticks in. So,
or you can stack them.
Yeah, so you can stack them. And basically you help each player keep track of something. So here's yellow player, here's green player. And say both of them are at 3. So you just put them like that. And then you know that they're both at 3 and you can move them. So it's just a way to keep track of the numerical for everyone to see. And a whole giant pile of cards of two different sizes.
Oh boy, these are really badly mixed up. Some of these cards, I'm not entirely sure what they do, but the cards that I do know what they do are the cards with numbers on them. Oh my god, this is a mess. If folks can take a shot at trying to separate out the different kinds of cards.
A lot of the cards that you get are these encounter cards, which have these numbers. And what you're basically doing is you're using these cards to really identify who's going to have the initiative in fighting each other. Here we go. Yeah. So you add, so these numbers, depending on how many cards that you play, basically give your ships some sort of attack power. But then you also have individual ships that can move on to attack. And say I'm attacking the red planet, then what I'll do is I'll point this arrow towards the red planet. Everybody who's defending the red planet puts ships on the red planet. Everybody who's attacking it puts it on this wonky thing. But you know, very nice point of what you think to show that this is what you're attacking. And the whole game basically largely comes down to you trying to encourage other people to contribute either to your defense or to your attack. Please give me some ships, please give me something to help me with my defense or my attack, and sort of negotiating for mutual benefit and retraining for the right hand or something. But this is the really, really interesting part of the game, which is when you start the game, you get one of these cards, and this tells you what race you are. And each race basically has a power that lets them break the rules somewhere in the rules. Only you have this ability to break this power. So for instance, this is the hate race, and they have the power of rage. So at the start of the turn, you can use this power to force every player to either discard a ship, to discard a card on the ships. You have to discard one from your own hand too, but everybody else must then discard of the same type. So if I put down a counter card, an attack card, everybody has to like discard an attack card. Or they lose 3 ships to the ward. So it can just make people angry with this power. There's filch where you steal cards from other people, the power to hack. You can demand compensation from other players, basically. Cool. So you get this kind of like weird, almost like CCG collectible card game kind of dynamic, where depending on what you start with is going to determine the shape of the rest of the game going forward. And every time you play this game, you can have a different set of cards because each player gets a different card, which means it's very, very likely that you have to play 2 games with even the same set of races at the table. And you're probably not playing the same race that you would have even if you have played 2 races before. And the whole idea of the games that we picked up today, that all of them are kind of like an interesting take on what it means to have changing rules in a game. Right. There's Risk Legacy. How many of you played this in particular? Okay. So, how long have you had a game going? Risk Legacy. How many rounds?
I played with people on my own. I played in like 3 games, and I think we played a total of 12 or so.
12 games. Every time you play this game, the game changes.
I've heard of this.
Yeah. Let's play it, change it, make it yours. When you first buy this game, there are four packets, four envelopes that are actually like attached here. And you can see we played this a bit, so we've opened all of them. And that gives you new cards, stickers that you can stick on the old cards. You can see this card has had a whole bunch of stickers added onto it. That basically introduced new rules into the game. You can change the map. And usually this comes down to, you know, the people who won or people who lost get certain abilities to make changes to the map. So certain areas now have these biohazard logos on them. Certain areas have been nuked. Certain cities have been established. So for instance, this is the kingdom of Skype land. This is the kingdom of mine.
That's mine, by the way.
That's yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, clearly it's not mine, so.
Yeah. There's Chupacabra here. Gambitville, Alhambra.
Who named these?
Here's Hill.
Yeah.
And there's the city of Venice in Japan. Okay. So this was interesting because one way to think about it is that it starts off. Does it even start off like a game of Risk?
Yeah, like, it starts off like Risk, but closer to, I think, Risk 20-something, rather.
Yeah.
It's one of the later editions of Risk where there's like turn order cards and a couple other. It does resources differently than classic Risk did. But basically, it is Risk.
Yes, and you have stickers that you can attach on. Gives an example of the issue. And so basically, every time you play this game, you're playing a different game.
Yeah. The great thing is this one, there's a story that goes along. So as you do things, the story changes. So you're in this post-apocalyptic hellscape with these factions that are fighting each other. And then all of a sudden, when a certain condition is reached, one of those boxes opens up and new elements of the story are discussed. And then a new faction comes up, or a new race comes up. So spoilers, there's aliens. It's right there called Alien Island.
Oh,
someone becomes the alien collaborator, and that faction from now on is considered the collaborator. It gets some special powers because of the aliens, but they don't get, I think they get special powers, and I think they get a special like something that goes against them.
This game is actually probably not best played cold, but what I will suggest is that folks take a look at this box, because just trying to internalize all of the changes that have happened to this game since it was originally open will probably take too long for this class. But it's very, very neat for you to take a look and see what sort of changes have been made. But one way that the designer has explained it to me in the past is that a lot of the rules that you get, a lot of the changes you get to make later in the game are actually their tools for you to fix game balance. So they're really, really powerful changes that you can make to the rules. But the whole idea is that after you play something like 15 rounds or 10 rounds of this game, you kind of know where the game is broken, where the board is unfair in certain places, or maybe where an earlier change totally unbalanced how the game is played out. And the players now have the tools to officially fix those imbalances to play. So in a way, if the players are being employed into the game design process. And what you end up with in the end is the game that only you have and nobody else has.
Warriors is kind of like a deck building game.
Only you have dice. And you can see from the box quite a lot of dice. I actually don't have a whole lot of information about this game.
It plays like Dominion.
Yeah.
It literally does. The cards are out, you build your deck just like it's Dominion, and when you do attacks or certain things, you have a card that represents a thing that you can use, and then dice that are reflected in that card.
So, like a lot of other deck building games, you know, as I was describing with Cosmic Encounter, often when you're actually going into a game, what you're seeing is not quite what you've ever seen before in the previous game. So every time you're trying to like figure out what is the pace, what's the momentum, what are the strategies for this particular round that I'm playing, Quarries just happens to be an interesting twist on that because you think dice inefficient cards.
And such as Catan may seem like an odd thing to bring up, but you know, back when it first came out, it's kind of neat. It was one of the games that definitely popularized the whole idea that every time you play this game, you have a different board, because you have these hexes that are arranged in random order, and a system to be able to make a random map into playable, no matter how it's arranged, and then you're playing a different scenario every time you start a new game. Now we also have the Seafarers expansion, and that's kind of like a traditional way that publishers use to change rules, right? They give you all the parts and maybe a new set of rules to be able to add to an existing set of pieces on the board. And what happens is that the map is a lot larger, as you can see, because you have additional tiles. Actually, I don't know if you can see this from the back, but you can see it's a lot larger. It uses some of the tiles from the old one, gives you a few new pieces, new rules, and you're playing a different game now. So this one might also be neat, and I wouldn't suggest just playing a game, a straight out game of Settlers of Catan, because I know a lot of you already have. But it might be actually neat if you haven't seen the Seafarers expansion, especially if you haven't played the Seafarers expansion, to actually look through how they present the rules, so that knowing how to play this game, how do they introduce new sets of rules to change the way they're going to play.
A big difference for that one with the islands, rather than having roads to settlements, you have shipping lanes that you build that connects ports.
Yep. And I believe you don't know what's on the island until you get there.
So
you don't actually know. It's not like the Settlers of Catan where you can see the entire island at the beginning of the game. From the reading, did anything strike anyone from the reading? Just wondering if, yeah.
They said that, I guess, the unbalance in the game was the actual fun.
Yeah.
And that they were going for the feel of that if you find that something is not fair, then you have your own unfair power to sort of counter that.
Right. Everyone has a way to cheat, basically, but it's officially mandated by the game. And it's a different way to cheat for everyone.
It's kind of similar to diplomacy, which is like inherently unbalanced. Like anyone who's actually like played several games of diplomacy knows that like some of the, I don't remember which countries, but like some of them are like in much stronger positions, and like two of them together can like take out the entire board if people let them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in general, like more advanced and experienced players will like not let that happen, or will like all gang up and crush the first one or something like that.
Right.
Which kind of makes an interesting metagame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can spot the patterns, but then you also have a lot of tools to
right.
try to like push back against that once you know that the game already has this dynamic.
I consider Cosmic Encounter to be sort of like the better version of Bloodshed, in that they're both sort of stomp the leader games, where it's literally everyone. It's very easy for almost everyone to get to like the brink of victory, and it's all about like how you have several turns in a row where people are like attempting to win and everyone's trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when the people run out of stuff to stop the winner.
Yeah. And then the game comes to an end. I remember games of Cosmic Encounter dragging on for a really long amount of time, but I'm not entirely sure if that's the case with this particular edition of the game.
The idea of fun and imbalance reminds me of Draw Minus, where sort of the motto is, if it's broken, break it till it's fixed. So
I haven't heard that one.
If you haven't played it, basically they took Super Smash Bros. Brawl and just way overpowered like a bunch of different people's moves, so you're just doing ridiculous things the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually ends up working pretty well. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah. League of Legends did Ultra Rapid Fire,
yeah.
Which is kind of that too. but I think that's the one of the neat things that I remember from the reading was, if you have a game where it's fun to lose, you've got something really, really good there. They were a lot more flippant about some of the other ways that you can tell you have a good game, like you lose the game when you have a divorce because your spouse wanted the game. Like I'm not sure whether how that metric is useful, but the other but some other metrics to tell whether your game you got something really interesting as a game is that one, if the game system is actually continually surprising the people who have actually designed the game, then you know, just every once in a while you just see something you've never seen before, and you're the ones who made it, you know, then you've got a really interesting system there.
And if people have stories to tell about their game after they're done. I think Munchkin has that, Cosmic Encounter definitely has that. They do try to give you the tone through the writing, both games, Munchkin and Cosmic Encounter, these American trash games, where there's a lot of like verbal humor in the text. But I feel Cosmic in the dynamics of Cosmic Encounter, much like the comment earlier, does also create a lot of Imogen story of like this person betrayed that person. I guess diplomacy does that too, but you don't want to tell stories about the diplomacy because there's so many bad feelings associated with that. Whereas what happens in Cosmic Encounter is kind of hilarious usually. So Munchkin does that too. Yeah. So you can tell stories about that. It's like, oh, I remember the time when, you know, I was going like this close to winning and then all of you stopped on me, you know. And then I used this power and then I managed to pull myself out. And then this person just came from nowhere and won the whole game. That's
so, like, I used to be competitive about Munchkin and I played like two or three games and I was like, this game's a joke.
It's one long running joke, yeah.
So there's a roll or a class or something like the Thief where you can like roll a die. Actually, even better is the one where you just take people's shit all day. Like, I had a friend who, like, literally every turn you would just, like, roll, like, keep going downhill until he was level one and just keep taking people's shit and just, like, okay, man, like, you clearly don't want to win. All you're doing is trolling me right now.
Right. I mean, it's supposed to be a simulation of what a role-playing group actually does when they get it together, not how a role-playing game actually works. Okay. So I think if we can start with the playing these games now, I'm going to guess about an hour. Again, I would not suggest Risk Legacy for playing, but yeah, definitely welcome to take a look at it. The rest of the games go right ahead, and probably that'll hopefully leave us with at least 1 hour and possibly 1.5 hours for you to work in your teams for the second half of class. Cool? Yeah.
Are you playing Jazz on Monday then?
Yes, Jazz was on Monday. Sorry, did I say Wednesday?
Yes, I don't remember.
Okay. Alright. Yes, Monday. Monday is a day where we go outside and get ready to play Jazz, which means wear comfortable shoes. And
spring next week.
And hopefully it'll be warmer. We'll almost certainly be playing it indoors though, because outdoors is usually too noisy to play. Alright? So grab them.
Guitar needs a lot of space, so go ahead and take it over.
Need both boxes too.
I want to play dice.